Hello, creative people. Welcome to Creative Conversations. My name is Hollis Citron, and I am so happy that you're here and you've chosen to spend your hour with us. I know life gets busy and really, really appreciate you being here. Just to give you some background, this podcast was born from the mission of my company, I Am Creative, which is to expand the definition of creativity beyond a pencil and a paintbrush and to empower people to realize and own their talents. And adults, yes, I'm talking to you. This is a safe space to share our perspectives and our stories, created all around three questions. One, how do you define creativity? Two, how do you incorporate it into your life? And three, why do you think that it's important? Then we have a free-flowing conversation, and we see where it goes from there. So if you're here with us live, you get to participate in the conversation by typing the questions or comments in the chat box, and we will definitely get to you. So my fabulous guest for tonight is Chelsea Fox, and I'm so excited to talk to her because we have known each other for a long time, but it's really been a while since we've really spoken. And Chelsea is a self-proclaimed recovering perfectionist. She strives to live mindfully, creatively, and authentically every single day. She believes every single human being, is an artist. And the greatest gift we can all give ourselves is to embrace the fear and make art anyway. Definitely a quotable quote to just start out with. So Chelsea, are you here?
I am.
Yay! I am so happy that you're here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So let me get it louder on my end. There we go. So did you have anything that you wanted to add into from the bio that I said about you? I know we're going to dive into a lot of stuff, but anything else you want to add?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. So I think a very important part of that bio that I left out was that in third grade, Mrs. Barnes at Greenberg Elementary School gave me a C in art. And I, at 8 years old, was already a seasoned perfectionist. Mm-hmm. And the real kicker about that C in art is that we didn't even have an art class. We just was part of the regular class. It wasn't like a separate art class like people have now. And I had So I had straight A's and a C in art. Mm-hmm. And before I received that report card, I thought of myself as creative. I thought of myself as good at art. And that experience really shaped how I thought about creativity for a really long time. And I think that it, there's a lot of ways that it, we can come back to it as we talk about what perfectionism is.
Definitely. And I'm so glad you brought that up because that is a huge component because so much of our thoughts as we become, as we grow into adults, obviously stem from childhood.
Yeah.
So all of that childhood stuff, that's where, you know, I mean, we all know this, the people that we're surrounded by. And so much about school is about, you know, the way that we're graded, because in America, that's kind of what happens is you're given a grade for things.
Yeah.
And it sticks with us. I had a second grade teacher who told me to marry a rich man because I couldn't count money.
Yeah, I think it really goes to, I think that there's lots of, you know, everybody is different. I definitely, the people that love me will be the first to tell you I am as type A as they come. That is who I am. I think it's part genes, part, you know, environment, all those different things. And comments like that can a different type personality could just shrug that off and be like, I don't really care what she thinks, or, but that was not me. I very much cared at that time what people thought. And I think it's very dangerous for kids like I was that are looking to define themselves by grades and what other people think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let me ask you before we dive into all that, but because I just want to know, I know, like, how long did it take for you to, what was this teacher's name?
Mrs. Barnes.
Mrs. Barnes. Grade. How long did it take for you to basically come to terms and be like, Miss Barnes, you know, that's not true.
Didn't know what she was talking about. Yeah. I think I thought a lot about that in just kind of going over in my head, how we would talk about this, because I am at a place now where I would say that creativity is my love language. It is how I share who I am, and I am much more confident and comfortable in doing that now. I think even when I thought of myself as quote unquote not creative, others would define me as that. And I think that until you embrace it for yourself, no one else can make you feel that way. Like, you have to own your own creativity. So other people can define you as creative or say, oh, you have come up with great ideas, or, you know, I think that you're really great at art, but it wasn't really until, it's still a process. I think it's something that you commit to.
The word commit. Wow, what a wonderful word that is. Okay, so yeah, so this is going to be nice and juicy. Okay, great. So the people just jumping on, welcome. So happy that you're here. Just to recap real quick, the whole mission behind my company is to expand the definition of creativity beyond just the visual arts, beyond drawing and painting, and understand that creativity is an expression, and everybody has it in whatever kind of form that comes in. And this is all based, the conversation's based around these three questions. And we're going to start with our first question right now, which is, Chelsea, how do you define creativity?
That was another one the first thought that came to me was, it is, again, like a commitment to vulnerability and authenticity and mindfulness. It's openness. It is imagination. Brené Brown, who is someone that very much helped me. She's an author.
Love her.
Yes, amazing. Find power in my creativity. She talks about creativity that it's the way that she shares her soul with the world, and that without it, she is not okay. And I think that is, she also wrote the book, The Gifts of Imperfection, which is, if you feel like you struggle with perfectionism, it's a great place to start. And she talks a lot about how creativity heals us. So I don't know if that is, if that's a definition or not.
I mean, I'm hearing so many strong, powerful words in this. So commitment, vulnerability, openness, imagination, power, finding your power. I mean, those are such incredible words. And see, because this is one of my big pet peeves. I have many pet peeves about certain things, but when people are like, oh, it's so nice that you get to be creative, which usually refers to an artsy craftsy thing, which is fine. That's fine. I'm not downplaying that. It has its place. It's an expression. It's something that you're doing. That's all well and good. But creativity to me is not cute. It's necessary.
Yes. It's so interesting that you put it that way, because Brené Brown also talks about that there are no creative people and non-creative people. There are only people who use their creativity and people that don't. And that when you have unused creativity, it doesn't just disappear. It lives in us. Until it's expressed, neglected to death, or suffocated by resentment and fear.
Oh my God.
I think that is like, it sounds like so dramatic, but the ways that I have opened myself up to know, to allow creativity into my life has made me someone who finds particular about the word joy, because joy is different than happiness. I think that everyone's always looking for happiness, and that's unattainable. No one's happy all the time. For me, creativity brings me moments of joy. And that's the goal. It's not to be happy. It's to be mindful enough to be paying attention for the moments of joy.
Oh my God. So mindful enough to be paying attention. Do you realize how powerful that is?
I do, because this podcast has been it's like a full circle moment for me, because I would never have agreed to do something like this even a year ago. We kind of talked about this a little bit, you know, when you asked me to do it, because it's a way for me to look at where I am in my life right now and know that I am living that commitment. Mm-hmm. And that is so hard. It's not like that, like what you said about, oh, that's so great to you get to be creativity. Like, creativity is a job. It is. I mean, it is what she talks about. If you are not embracing it, it is eating you alive.
Which
everyone has it.
Because this is where, I've been teaching art for 30 years. I've been in the school systems.
You taught me art.
I was so grateful to be able to have met you while teaching you art. But it's so much more than just that. But I happen to be, that was my major. But anyway, where I'm going with this is that it is, so many times as adults, I specifically left my job in the school system because I was like, I need to reach adults. I want to work with kids as well, but I really need to reach adults because we get lost.
Yes.
And we get lost in the responsibilities of life. We get lost in what we see as being commitments. And we get cut off from those things that are about expression, because creativity is expression.
Yeah.
And if we do not express it, whether it's in cooking, whether it's in music, whether it's in doing numbers and accounting, whether it's in creating science experiments, whether it's writing, like whatever it's in. And if we don't give it a voice and allow it out, it will eat us alive and it will make us miserable.
Yes. And I think that it can be, I was afraid of my creativity because of my perfectionism. I think that in working through really coming to terms with what it means to be a perfectionist and understanding that there's a difference between perfectionism is not striving to do your best. Perfectionism is about, it's a shield. That's how Brené Brown talks about it. It is a way that we shield ourselves from failure. And in order to really come to the place where I am in being able to be committed to my creativity, I had to let down the shield of perfectionism, because you can't, if you're afraid to try, because you're afraid to fail, it's really hard to be creative or to even feel creative. And you can make art and it not feel creative.
Right. Right. You just, as you were saying that, I wrote down because of the shield, which is a great analogy. You don't do it. And if you don't do it, then you can't say that you weren't good at it.
Right. And I know in my life now that if I am not making art, I am not okay. That is one of my indicators, that check in with yourself, because something is off, something is not right. And I think, you know, when people think about creativity, right away they go to artist. And then to me, it's like the woman with the beret and the paintbrush in her hand.
Uh-huh.
And that is like the Chelsea that got a C in art could never be the artist with the beret with the paintbrush in her hand. That was like, okay, and if you can't be that, then that must mean that you're not creative. And one way that I was able to find a type of art, because art is one, it's under the umbrella of creativity, but it's not an equal sign, was mixed media art. Because there's no blank page, and it's a lot of really tearing things apart and putting them back together. And it's a great way to practice screwing up. It's a safe way to make mistakes, and you don't have to share it with anybody. It's just something that you do for yourself.
Mm-hmm. I love what you're kind of pointing. I keep saying I love, but these points of about it being private and it being your expression, your creative outlet doesn't have to be for the world to see, and it can be just for you.
Oh, my art is not shared with anyone. I am creative, and I share my creativity with, like I said, it's my love language. I love giving gifts. I get that kind of like when I find something that someone's going to love because I'm paying attention and I'm mindful.
Right.
And I know like they are going to love this. And I love the gift wrapping and a bow and the whole nine yards and watching someone open it. That is me sharing my creativity with the people that I love. But my art is for me. It's not for anyone other than for me. It's like a diary.
Like a diary. So then how long? So saying that it's your love language and you love giving it to people. Were you always that way? Or did you hesitate because it might not be good enough?
I think I was always that way. I think that it's, again, when I was living in perfectionism, it was about, I got my sense of worthiness from other people. So when I gave you a gift and you were like, oh my God, how did you know that I would love this? And it's wrapped so beautifully and all those things. And I would be like, check, 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 check. She likes me. That's perfectionism. Mm-hmm. Now, when I give you a gift and you give me that same feedback, I am able to be mindful in that. And I'm able to take that in and I am with you in that moment. It's mindful. It's not about, that doesn't define me as a person. So if you open it and say, this is ugly, I will still be okay because I am not defined by the way that I shared my creativity with you because it's a gift that I'm giving you.
So that's a really big distinction because people can see that as being their worthiness of them being, you know, are they good enough?
Yeah.
And by not being affected by what somebody thinks and how they react, you're giving from the heart. You're giving from a different space.
Yeah, and I think I still was giving from the heart then. I thought I was. I think that perfectionists don't realize the armor that they're carrying around. And that was my safety, was if I can control everything and I can make it nice and pretty, everything will be okay. But that is so much work. It's so much work. And creativity is work. So you'll get burned out by trying to fit all of those things in. So being able to let go of some of the perfectionism, it made space for me to be able to feel my creativity. Because everyone should get to feel it. It's a gift we give ourselves too.
Right. Right. And that, what you said, that word is a huge word, control.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like literally, it's anytime I hear that word or anything, it's kind of like gripping. It's like this, either you have the rope and you're holding on and your knuckles are red, or you're scratching and you're just like climbing up rocks and holding on to that rock and hoping you don't fall or something like that.
Yeah.
And that gripping creates a whole bunch of feelings, which are not good feelings. Like you said, it's the opposite of joy.
Yeah. And we carry it around. This is what Brené Brown talks about, is perfectionism is a 20-ton shield that we lug around thinking it will protect us when in fact it's the thing that's really preventing us from taking flight. Mm-hmm. And it's when you let the armor down, but that is so, when you let it go, you are vulnerable.
Right.
And that is what, as a perfectionist, I was trying to avoid at all costs. was being vulnerable and feeling anything. That, I mean, that's another piece of it, is that idea that if we are not happy, if we're feeling any other emotion other than happiness, we must not be okay. And yes. I think that's another way of, when I learned that, when I embraced the idea of finding joy instead of finding happiness, it normalized every other emotion, which allowed me to be mindful.
So finding joy and not happiness.
Yeah, it's a life-changing thing.
It really is, because, I mean, the fact is this isn't a romantic comedy. It's not like one of these. This is in real life, and there's ups, there's downs. You have to have the contrast of those moments in order to know what you want. You have to be able to experience things and know how to handle yourself in a way where it doesn't pull you all the way. When you have those scales of emotion and love, joy, happiness being at the top, and depression, anxiety, fear being at the bottom, like, you have to learn to work yourself up the scale, not have to be like going from, you know, fear to joy. It's too far.
Right. And I think even if when you really believe that emotions will not kill you, like that any emotion that you feel will have a beginning, a middle, and it will always end. I promise you. And that is something that I did not believe for myself. Like, if I let myself fall into sadness, I will never get out of it. So I have to just stay, you know, working or create, or like producing things or helping, anything to avoid feeling sadness. And what I learned is that if I just let myself feel sad, it ends. And then there's another feeling that comes. But that's terrifying when the first time you do it, and that you get comfortable with when you've been running from feeling for so long.
Right. Right. And everybody,
but you got to feel in order to be creative.
you have to let it in, because you have to feel into what interests you and what you're good at. And I remember this one particular scenario in the classroom, and I had a student that was very difficult. Like, you didn't know what she was going to be doing day to day. Like, you didn't know if she was going to be starting a fight in the class. You didn't know if she was, you just didn't know what was going to happen. And I had something called Beautiful Oop. So it's not my
book.
It's from a book. Yeah. So worked it into the language in the classroom of Beautiful Oops. What do? Try again, or turn it into something else. And there was a day when someone sitting next to her messed up, and she turned around and said, Beautiful Oops, turn it into something else. I was like, oh my God, I can die now and go to heaven. Like,
yeah.
Like, she, a student who I could never read and understand if she was really getting it, actually took it in.
Yeah. And I think that's another, such a beautiful thing about being able to be mindful. I have gained so much healing for myself in being able to share what I have, the growth that I have through, you know, reading these amazing books, lots and lots of therapy, which I am not afraid to admit. I think everyone in the world would be a happier place if every single human went to therapy. Mm-hmm. Side note. But being able to give that to my nephews, who are like the love of my life, and them being able to, me watching them be creative, and I in creating a safe space for them to make those beautiful oops, and I read that book to them. There's so much healing for myself, and they have taught me so much about the joy in being mindful, because kids are naturally mindful. That's how they operate. A lot of times they get on our nerves because they're so mindful, right? We're getting them ready to go, and they're like, no, I just want to, you know, blow the dandelion seeds. And we're like, no, but we got to go. And they're focused on the dandelion, because that's their job, is to play and explore. And being able to see that, and the children in my life have given me such a gift of finding the a childlike creativity, because they know how to do it. And if we let them, they can teach us a lot.
And on that note, somebody's asking a question, which is a very good question. And I'm curious to see what you would say to this, Chelsea, and then see if I have anything to chime in on here. What advice would you give to a parent recognizing perfectionist type behaviors?
So I mentioned Brené Brown, Glennon Doyle I am her unofficial president of her fan club, and she just doesn't know it. I tell every single human being, please read Untamed. The world needs Untamed. I am not getting paid to say this, I promise. It's just changed my life. And but what she talks about is that our job as parents, or I'm not a parent, but I am given the gift of having little ones in my life that I get to watch them grow up, mm-hmm. is that we cannot protect them from pain. And the greatest gift that we can give them is letting them have their pain. It is so hard, so hard, so hard. I want to wrap my nephews in bubble wrap so that no one can ever hurt them. And what I have seen is that when I don't rescue them and I let them have their feelings, and teach them words to have their feelings, that has been so healing for me. I wonder how my life would have been different if at 3 I knew how to say, I am frustrated, I am angry, I am sad. Because kids, if we don't give them those words, they just throw temper tantrums. Yeah. Because they don't, and that is, the more that we get in touch with our own feelings, we help them get in touch with their feelings. And that feeling feelings is the answer to overcoming perfectionism. Feeling feelings and mindfulness. Mm-hmm. And it just, I think also being able to recognize that you are really doing a disservice to yourself and not just your kids or your loved ones, we think that we're protecting people and we're really controlling them. And getting back to Glennon Doyle, what she talks about is you don't control something you love. You love it and you allow it to be what it is. So love is not control. That they're two different things, because love is trust.
Mm-hmm. So powerful. And that is, she said, sitting with your pain is crucial for growth.
Yeah.
Because you do have to allow, you can't change people, and you don't want to control, like you're saying, you don't want to control.
Well, you do want to, right? Like, let's all be honest.
Yeah. Yes.
In my perfect world, I could control everyone. And if everyone just did things exactly the way I say, we would be great. Like, let's not pretend ourselves, kid ourselves. I would love to have control over everyone. But I did not find joy in controlling everyone. I found depression and anxiety, and I missed the opportunities for joy because I was too busy controlling everyone and controlling the situations and the environment. And I missed lots of really beautiful moments because I was not mindful. And it's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. So it's kind of like, you know, if this is helpful, who's asking the question, you know, for your daughter, is kind of to allow her to be who she is, but create, like you said, that safe space. And by labeling words and emotions and things like that, expands the vocabulary to be able to say how you're feeling. And you have to fail, or you have to experience things in order to then be able to see the other side of it.
Yeah, that actually just made me think of another thing, that I think that there's lots of things that I hope that I have taught the little people in my life that I love. I feel that the best the most growing moments that I've had, especially with my nephew Julian, is the moments where I have screwed up. Like I yelled because I was frustrated, and they were focused on the dandelions, and we needed to go. And being able to come back to them and be like, "Oh, I'm really sorry. That was not cool. Like, it's not okay for you to yell. It's not okay for me to yell. And I hope that you can forgive me. I'm really sorry that I did that." And it's teaching them that it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to screw up. We are all going to screw up. And it's about, you know, making amends and trying to do better next time. And I think that is another way of make mistakes, but use that as a teaching moment, because that is really a gift that we can also give our kids, is the ability to know that grown-ups make mistakes too.
I know I can speak from my experience that with my own kids. And so with your nephews, when this has happened, when you have said, "I screwed up," what have you found the reaction to be?
Well, I think now they know that, like, they know that I do that. So it doesn't really shock them. Yeah. But I think that in the beginning, Julian, I had from a very young age, some of, the other younger kids in my life, I haven't. So Julian learned his emotion words very early. But kids that, I babysat, where I would say that to them, they look at you like their mouth open. Like, right. Oh, what do you mean adults screw up? Like, I know for me, it wasn't until Julian was born that it clicked to me that parents literally have no idea what they're doing. Like, as a kid, we think that our parents should know everything. And Julian came into the world and I didn't birth him, like, obviously, but that moment happened for me of like, oh, like, parents just are people that have babies, and not like there's not a handbook. Like, they say that, and I had heard that before, but it was very eye-opening for me just in looking back at my own parents of like, they're just people. They were people that had babies.
And I have to share this. So as you're saying this, it's making me laugh, because now having, well, beyond just teenagers now, a 17 and a 20-year-old, but at a certain point, a certain circumstance happened where my son and I are driving in the car, and he shared some information with me, and I needed processing time. And he's like, "Can I have those 20 seconds back?" I'm like, "Nope." And he's like, "Well, you're never going to look at me the same way." I'm like, "You know what, babe?
You're right.
I just have to process this information." And in the handbook, there was nothing about this. Yeah. I didn't know when I would have to start talking about this. Right. And this, of course, is we're going to Target. But but it's just, you don't know. There is no pamphlet that comes along with it. And you just have to be honest and know that your kids, there's been many times I've blown up. There's been many times now my kids being old enough, my daughter will say to me, "Just because you had a bad day, don't take it out on me."
Yeah.
And I'll be like, "I'm sorry. You know what? You're right. I need some breathing room. Please leave me alone and let me walk away."
But I think too, isn't that so amazing? Like, those moments where they have called me on my own crap, like when they have said to me like those exact kind of things, and you're like, "Oh," your initial feeling is like, "Oh, don't talk to me like that." But then it's also that moment of like, "Oh my God, they're getting it." Like, I want them to challenge things. I want them to ask questions. I want them to have a voice. I want them to know their power. I want them to know that it's okay to make mistakes, because that's the other wonderful thing about being imperfect parents, caregiver, whatever word you want to put in there, is that we are giving others permission to also be imperfect when we are imperfect.
Oh my God. Okay. So yeah, we could keep. So let's go on to the second question. Because we have an hour. So we're past the halfway point. So, okay. So The second question is, how do you incorporate creativity into your life? You've talked a lot about what you do for your outlet. So what are some of the, what do you do for yourself?
So just going right off of that last, the last comment I made. So, you know, I have this list of things of, you know, I mentioned gift giving and another thing that came to me, I don't know if people know, the big thing right now is the home edit, like the professional organizers. And I feel like the home edit stole my organizing ideas. Okay. Like I feel personally offended. No, I'm just kidding. But like I was doing home edit before there was a quote unquote home edit. Like the Container Store is my happy place. Mm-hmm. And through COVID, it has, in different moments, it has been really hard for me to make my art, right? That's personal for me. And, mm-hmm. but I still have to find ways to be creative because unused creativity eats us alive. Mm-hmm. So organizing is one of those ways that I love when something looks put together, like being able to take a mess and organize it. I feel like it organizes my brain and I can get more things done. Mm-hmm. Like I threw out so much crap through COVID. Mm-hmm. Dan would come home and be like, another box I got to take to Goodwill. Yes. Right. Another, we're getting rid of everything.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But it really was like, that was a way. And another one that came to mind is like, I love packing a car, like with the trunk. Mm-hmm. I can get things because I can see it. And I can, it's like a Tetris puzzle. And it is like, but that is creativity. I can look at a trunk and be like, yeah, I did that. And because I was mindful with it, you got to be in the moment. Okay, where is this going to fit? Where is that going to fit? But I
and
think it also
solving.
Yes.
Right. It's and, which for people who are listening and are like, oh, but I'm in business, it's, problem solving is a creativity. It, taking something and figuring out the solution.
Right.
Creativity. So I'm sorry I cut you off, but yeah, it's all about problem solving.
Yeah. And that's another place that, you know, I've had moments on and off. I've been a paralegal for, it's going to be 15 years soon. And wow. There have been times that I have loved my job. There's been times I've been frustrated. I think everybody goes through those times. But I think that my, the moments I was able to find joy at work also coincided with the time as I was loosening the perfectionism. Because if you can imagine that someone who's perfectionist, that struggles with perfectionism, work, it's like school and then work becomes those places where it just explodes out of you. Mm-hmm. And I think I look at my job now, there's many, many ways that I, you know, I'm getting ready for a trial and I have to schedule experts to come in. And it's like organizing a trunk. Right? People are coming in from all over different states and it's getting it all fit in into a calendar, into a month. And I can look at that and be like, oh, this is so annoying. Like I got to call people, but it's also like, okay, well, how am I going to make this work? How am I going to fit people into the blocks? And I think that, again, it comes back to mindfulness. Where are you able to check in with yourself to know, okay, am I in this moment? And then it's the way that you can be creative with the way that you think about things is how you can find your creativity and find your moments of joy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was a lot.
Yeah, but you know what? It's so much about perspectives. And actually, I'm curious, like, so the organizing, and I totally see organizing as a creativity. Like, I get that completely. But I want to ask you the question because we mentioned the word control before.
Yeah.
So when organizing something, what is the difference between organizing the space and controlling the space? If that makes
sense. That is a great question. It comes back to mindfulness. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a great moment. This is one of the most amazing things. And I actually am just recognizing it. So if you're listening and you can just feel where your shoulders are, like how close are they to your ears? Mm-hmm. Right? So that is mindfulness. I hold my stress in my shoulders. That's what I have learned in being able to be mindful. So So there's a lot of times during the day where if I check in with myself and know, okay, well, how high up are my shoulders? And I have to take it down. So if I'm organizing and my shoulders are at my ears, that is control and perfectionism. Mm-hmm. If my body is relaxed and I have music on and it's about, I think, you know, why the home edit I think is popular is because it's about the way that it looks. It's kind of like a decor style, right? And decorating a home is creativity, 100%.
Yeah.
So I think it falls into that, into a decor decorating is how it becomes creativity.
Yeah.
Yes. Because it's all about the visual appeal, right? I don't know, like, so the home edit is like organizing everything by color. And yes, yeah, it does make things easier to find and put away, but it's also visually appealing. So right. I think that's the play. If you're in this, if your shoulders are at your ears or your back is tense or your jaw is tight, those are your indicators to know, am I trying to control my environment? Am I enjoying this? Am I giving myself permission to be vulnerable and mindful and in the moment? Or am I controlling all of the environment? It's the mindfulness is where you find it.
That is
for everything.
And I like really how you're pointing out to where it's in your body, do that check-in, because we do spend the day, so many say we're busy, busy, busy. And these times it's been different because for so long in quarantine, there was kind of like just the opposite of not being busy and not knowing what to do in that, which so many people found and kind of had time, whether they liked it or not, to discover certain things.
Yes.
But in that, when we are, even in those moments where your shoulders are and doing that check-in, because you could not be doing anything, but still not really checking in with yourself.
Oh, yes. It's
That's not mindful.
Yeah. No. And I think a lot of times people also hear mindfulness and they think of meditation. And when I'm talking about mindfulness, I'm not talking about like, that's not, and that I'm too much of a perfectionist still to be able to really enjoy meditation. I'll be perfectly honest with you. It's mm-hmm. too much quiet and I'm not there yet. Maybe one day, but the mindfulness.
Meditation though can be a walking meditation.
You're right. There are many different types of, but I think that people don't normally go there. They think of meditation. And when I first heard mindfulness, I was like, oh, I can't do that.
Right.
Like I am too much. I don't stop. So if you want me to sit with my thoughts, sorry, that sounds like a nightmare. That does not sound relaxing at all. I think it's also too, like, recognize your limitations. You know, some people can go and get their hair done and getting your hair dyed, and my hairdresser will tell you, I split it into two. I cannot sit there for the dyeing and the blow dry. It's too much sitting with nothing to do. I have to recognize that. And so I split it. I come back for the blow dry another day, and then I can enjoy it because I'm mindful. This is too much sitting for me. This is too much. It's 3 hours where my brain is always already going to, what should I be doing next? And I am not enjoying this. So be creative, right? That is creativity. Mindful is, this is not working for me. Creative is, okay, what's the problem? What's the solution to the problem? Call the hairdresser and say, can I come back another day when I want to go out for dinner and I want my hair done and I don't feel like doing it myself? And all the worst thing they can say is no. And luckily, my wonderful hairdresser said yes.
And what you're saying is also kind of bringing up to me is self-advocating for yourself, is taking the time to know yourself, this whole thing, and recognize your limitations and be able to say, yeah, that's just me. And that's what I like. And that's what I don't like. And yeah, I'm going to try things. Things are going to happen that I don't like. And I get it. But if I make a choice that something doesn't work for me, I'm going to say it doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And that's good.
Yeah. And are you going to make everybody happy?
You're not going to make everybody happy all the time. And that's good. Like, that's okay. It's not like you want to go around pissing people off all the time, but what you want to do too, is you don't want to lose yourself.
Yeah.
In that. So, I
think that is a lot of what Glennon Doyle talks about. And I actually, I have this written down and I had to fit it in somewhere because it is, when you talk about, like, there's the mindfulness piece. So being in recovery from perfectionism is mindfulness. And the second piece is exactly that, is finding your voice. What kept me in perfectionism, which kept me from being able to be mindful with creativity, was the fact that I did not feel I was worthy of having a voice. I didn't want to piss anybody off. I didn't want anyone to be mad at me. I was a fixer, right? So if I'm a perfectionist, my goal is keep the peace, make sure that everything is perfect. No one knows that anything's wrong. So the opposite of that is saying, hey, wait a second, this doesn't really work for me. Mm-hmm. And that is still a work in progress. It is a daily, sometimes moment by moment commitment to authenticity. And that, it's mindfulness and finding your voice and feeling worthy of having a voice, because that's really what gets in the way of having a voice.
Yeah.
That is the way out. So that is what I would tell 8-year-old Chelsea that got a C in art, is first of all, where are your shoulders when you get that C? Where are your shoulders? Because you are allowing someone who didn't even teach you art to define your creativity. We didn't even have an art project. I have no idea where she got the C from.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what did she base it off of? Like, what was the criteria?
4-year-old Chelsea would go to Miss Barnes and say, wait a second, why did I get a C? Right. Can you explain to me? Like, and that is where I think we, especially as women, are taught to not have a voice. We are told to stay small and quiet and uncomplicated, and having a voice complicates things. But the price that we give for being uncomplicated is our worthiness.
Oh my gosh. This is, so you're making me think of a story. So I went to art school, freshman year is foundation year. You have drawing, sculpture, 2D. And drawing was never really my thing per se. But you know, you have to take foundation year to figure out what your major is going to be. We were drawing something, and this teacher was the kind that drew on your paper, and that's how things got fixed. So it was just, as a pet peeve, I'm thinking, what am I learning from you? I'm not saying that I'm right in it. It needs to be corrected, but do it on another piece of paper so I can learn how to do it.
Right.
So she would constantly draw on the paper. And I finally, one time, here I was like a 19-year-old, and my voice was shaking. I was purple. And I said, could you please not draw on my paper? And she said, well, I don't think
bumps right now.
She said, I don't think you're good enough to do it on your own.
And isn't that always what happens sometimes?
And in the moment, I actually had the guts to say, I didn't ask you if I was good enough. To please draw on another piece of paper so I could learn. And I was shaking. I got a D in class. But
good for you.
When we went out on a break, all these people were coming up to me and they're like, good job, good job. I was like, F you. Like, where were you? You know she does this. And nobody else backed me up. Like, nobody stood behind and was like, yeah. But it's those moments where it's like, oh, my God. I was looking back on it. I was so happy that I had the voice to be able to say that, as scared as I was to face authority, quote unquote.
So that is a beautiful example, because a lot of people think, okay, well, I'm going to use my voice and I'm going to like tell everybody how I feel and I'm going to be uncomplicated. And then I'm going to say, don't draw my paper. And the teacher's going to be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Right.
I'll never do that again. But the truth of it is, most of the time people will react the way that the teacher did.
Yes.
But the reason that you left the class feeling your power is because you left left with your boundary. If you leave the room not saying anything, you take all that, it lives in your body. Mm-hmm. That boundary violation belongs with that teacher. It was not yours to carry. So you being able to use your voice, whether or not the person stops doing what you're asking them not to, that's not the point. The point is leaving other people's crap with them and not carrying it around with you.
Oh my God, everybody, are you hearing this? Because no. That's really the key to life, isn't it? I mean, know yeah. your boundaries, and you're not carrying everybody else's stuff. And
yes.
because especially as an empath, people uh-huh. who take on everybody's stuff and feel it. And I mean, I literally get, whether you believe in this or not, like I'll physically feel ill. And I realized it wasn't my illness. Like it was something going on. Our daughter a few years ago was in jaw surgery. She was literally having her jaws broken and replaced. And as she was in surgery, our son was napping like in the waiting room. And all of a sudden he woke up and he's like, my jaw is killing me.
Oh man.
And it was like, you're actually feeling her pain.
Yeah.
Like your sister's in there getting that. So as empaths, we take this stuff on, but creating those boundaries and not letting it live in our body. I mean, that's kind of a different thing. I kind of went off.
It is, and it's not, because empaths are the creatives of the world, right? Yes. And I'm not saying that you have to be an empath in order to be creative. I want to make sure I'm clear about that. But the people that empaths have, and I am an empath, so I feel you on it. And I think that that is why empaths are very, we are kind of like breeding grounds for perfectionism, because mm-hmm. we feel all this stuff that we don't feel like we have any control over, because it really isn't our stuff. And then we try and control all of it. And in the process, we get this armor that we're carrying around on top of everybody else's stuff. And then there's no voice that happens. And yeah. I know for myself, it got to a point where I could no longer carry the shield, everybody else's stuff, my own stuff, and continue to not have a voice in anything.
Yeah.
That was not, it was a moment of you either are going to change it or this is not going to work anymore. And a yeah. lot of the people in my, that was a learning curve for a lot of the people that love me, because I was a certain way for a very long time. And right. that I changed the dynamics of a lot of things. But I think that it was worth it. I think that it's the gift that I give to my nephews of showing them someone that has a voice that's a little bit complicated, but doesn't carry around everybody else's stuff.
Yes. Yep. It's a huge, it is such a gift to give that, to understand not to carry the weight of the world, to carry all that, because it's hard to differentiate all of that. And it feels so bad. It just weighs yeah. you down.
But that's also the mindfulness of yeah. where, what is happening. And I think that that's another really amazing way to incorporate creativity. If you're listening to this and you're thinking, I have no idea where to start. I don't like organizing. I don't like, you know, there's all these things. I know I don't like any of these things. All of us have this amazing ability to control is the wrong word. We have the ability to shape the way that we look at things. Mm-hmm. And that is really the only control that we have mm-hmm. of anything, is the way that what's going on in our head. Mm-hmm. So in order, if you can use creativity to certain times of the day, to just to be able to say, where are my shoulders? And are they up at my ears? And what's happening? And what am I feeling? And being able to check in with yourself, knowing when you're hungry, when you're tired, all of those things are what gives you the ability to then have a voice too. Like, those are ways that you can be creative to build your creativity muscle, which is going to build your muscle of being able to use your voice and say the things that you need to say.
Yeah, I think that's really so much of the key. I really agree with so much of that, because I personally think, and yes, my company is called I Am Creative, but I think the word creative gets used a lot, mm-hmm. and I think it gets overused. And I guess the mission within my company in saying that is, as I've said, is to expand the definition and understand that it's an expression.
Yeah.
And understand that it is, like you're saying, it's your voice and
superpower.
Whatever it is, whatever it is that you walk through this world that you feel like you were, and if you're not sure, it's there somewhere. You're here on this earth for a reason.
Yeah.
Whether it's about connection, whether it's about doing something whether it's creating electricity, whether it's like there's different scales of it doesn't have to be this huge thing. It could be in realizing I have a really good friend who realized that teaching was her superpower.
Oh yes, that is and meanwhile, creative.
Meanwhile, she was doing all these, you know, these quote unquote visual art things and everything, which she was enjoying, and reading, which she enjoys, but she was like, it's not exactly satisfying, that exact thing. And then when she realized that the whole point of her teaching career, like her actual methods, that was it. She was like, oh my God, a huge weight was lifted off my shoulders. Yeah. Like I found it. I found my reason.
And so, I'm sure she didn't change the way that she taught. She still did the same thing. It was the mindfulness of the way that it's the difference between organizing to control and organizing to make something beautiful. It is the way that we look at it, because you can literally do the same thing for both of those scenarios. It's your mind that's different.
It's true. We have you know how we have that angel and devil sitting on our shoulders?
Yes.
And being like, nin, 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 you know, that we all know the voices in our head where it's like, stop. But yeah, that's a whole other topic we could go off on forever. So coming to the top of the hour, this has been, oh my God. So we didn't even get to the third question, but the third question, which can be answered, I think it's going to sum everything up, is why do you think that creativity is important?
I think creativity is important because we are on this earth to do more than just work and pay bills and clean our houses and all of those things that we have to do. It is necessary. It is important because creativity is where you find the joy. It's where you shift your focus from thinking something must be wrong because I don't feel happiness. And I have drained myself from a stressful day at work. So this is my thing that I do that's creative, that's going to give me the moment of joy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's being mindful enough to know that you're stressed, that you need a moment of joy. It's being vulnerable enough to try things until you find something that feels good and feels like you're sharing your soul with the world or just sharing it with yourself. And I think that creativity is the way, the vehicle that gets us to be able to find our voices, because we practice problem solving through creativity.
Yeah.
For me, that was how it worked.
This was like a perfect circle of so many of the things that we touched on, and you just wrapped that up in a package really nicely. Nice little package with bow. It was imperfect.
Yes.
So, oh my gosh, Chelsea, thank you so much for being here. This has been, I've had a really good time, so I hope you have too.
I had a really good time, and I appreciate the space to practice being imperfect. I appreciate the opportunity to practice being vulnerable, and I appreciate the time. So thank you.
You are so, so welcome, and it's... So please, everybody, this is all about connecting, inspiring, and sharing stories. So like, follow, share, and that's the whole thing. Get it out there. We need to be talking about this stuff, and we need to have safe spaces for it. So to end on this note, as Chelsea said, check in with yourself and see where your shoulders are.
Yes.
So see where your shoulders are. And yeah, it was great being here. So we will be back. I will be back next week with another conversation, and just love doing this and meeting these incredible people. So again, like, follow, share, and I appreciate everybody. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.